Hi, this is Shine with the General Neurology Podcast. Welcome back to another episode of Cranial Nerve. Today I'm going to be talking about the glossopharyngeal nerve. So the glossopharyngeal nerve is the ninth cranial nerve. It's predominantly sensory, but also contains motor and parasympathetic components. It essentially arises from the lateral medulla as a series of small rootlets, rostral to those of cranial nerve 10 and 11. Again, all three nerves then pass through the jugular foramen. Again, at this point, or even beyond that, the ninth nerve divides into superior and petrous ganglia before descending the pharynx between the internal jugular vein and internal carotid artery. The small motor root supplies pharyngeal constrictors and elevators. The principal sensory root supply taste and tactile sensation from the posterior one-third of the tongue, the posterior pharyngeal wall, eustachian tube, and tympanic membrane, and of course the other targets such as chemo and baroreceptors. The parasympathetic fibers from the inferior salivatory nucleus leave the glossopharyngeal nerve at the petrous ganglion running in the tympanic and petrosal nerve, and they terminate in the parotid gland via the auricular temporal branch of the trigeminal nerve. Now let's talk about the examination. The pharyngeal sensation can be tested with the end of an orange stick. In the glossopharyngeal nerve, if there is a lesion, there is an altered sensation in the soft palate and pharynx. This can be quite difficult to diagnose in isolation and rarely of great importance because of neighboring nerves are also often affected. Now, so the loss of taste over the ipsilateral posterior third of the tongue is rarely symptomatic and cannot be tested. Isolated weakness of a stylopharyngeus, which is responsible for elevating the palate, is difficult to detect with only mild dysphagia or asymmetry of the palatal arch at rest. Because the nerve supplies the afferent limbs of both the pharyngeal and palatal reflex arcs, as well as the motor component of the former, the glossopharyngeal nerve lesions have the potential to interfere with both of these reflexes. So when you stimulate the normal pharynx or the base of the tongue or tonsillar area with an orange stick, it results in pharyngeal elevation and constriction with a bit of a tongue retraction. So in an isolated glossopharyngeal nerve lesion, the muscles of the pharynx supplied by the vagus continue to contract, so making it impossible to diagnose an isolated glossopharyngeal nerve lesion by this method. Now, an isolated peripheral glossopharyngeal nerve palsy is excessively rare. Lesions can be generally identified by additional structures involved. Central lesion, where unilateral supranuclear lesion caused no deficit because of the bilateral input to the nucleus ambiguus. It is only when there are bilateral cortical barbar lesion as part of this pseudobarbar palsy that overt signs are seen, concluding tongue spasticity, dysarthria with emotional lability. Peripheral lesions usually occur as part of the jugular foramen and CPA syndromes. Most distally, the nerve can be injured in the retropharyngeal space by a structural lesion, for example, a primary tumor such as nasopharyngeal carcinoma or metastatic spread, and of course surgical complications such as carotid endarterectomy. Now let's talk about glossopharyngeal neuralgia. Glossopharyngeal neuralgia is a rare condition. There is unilateral sharp stabbing pain in the ear or throat, lasting for seconds or minutes. Like trigeminal neuralgia, pain can be triggered by movement of neighboring structures such as yawning or chewing. The pain is intense and paroxysmal in nature, bradycardia or even asystole with hypotension and syncope have been described during the attack. The cause often remain obscure, although CPA structural lesion, demyelination and possibly vascular loop compression of the posterior inferior cerebral artery have been found. As with trigeminal neuralgia, carbamazepine and gabapentin may be effective. And of course, microvascular decompression is usually curative for this condition. However, nerve section is also sometimes carried out in severe cases. Now, this brings us to the end of the podcast. Thanks very much again for listening. If you have any questions or if you'd like me to cover any particular topic in future, please leave a comment on my Instagram page at neurology.pa. And if you have a minute, I'll be grateful if you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Now, I'm doing this series of podcasts to make neurology more interesting for both clinicians and students. I've witnessed a lot of neurophobia amongst medical students, PA students, and even clinicians when they think about neurology in general. So I'm hoping in future there will be more students and clinicians more interested in neurology and potentially even choose neurology as a specialty. I think, you know, it's one of those specialties that you learn on the job. Every day is like a new day for you. You see so many interesting cases. And the beauty of the specialty is that you actually work with many, many other specialties. And you still keep your general knowledge up to date, even though that you're quite specialized in one area. And the other thing that I particularly love about neurology is the fact that you can look at the patient from the end of the bed, and by the inspection itself, you can see so many signs, and you're already thinking about differentials in your head before even talking to your patient. And if you're a visual person like myself, and if you think that you would like to, you know, solve a puzzle and trying to talk with different specialties to find out what's exactly going on with a patient, neurology is a wonderful specialty for you. But again, you have to choose a specialty that really, you know, matches your personality. And again, choose your passion. And I've said this to many students actually at on the ward round, after ward round, anywhere really. When you choose your passion, you are essentially choosing something that you love. I know it sounds really cliche, but you're choosing something that you're very interested in. And every single day, when you learn something new, it kind of, I don't know, magically, you remember it and you don't forget that because you love it. And the time goes very quick. You know, if you're in a job that is not really your passion and you're just choosing that job just to, obviously, you know, make a bit of money or gain a bit of experience, you're not going to be doing that job for long. But if you choose your passion and choose something that you really, really love doing, you know, you would be so thrilled to go to work the next day. You wouldn't be one of those people, you know, saying, oh my God, it's Monday, I have to go back to work. Anyway, one day I'm going to be doing hopefully a podcast just about what I do on a day-to-day basis. And on that note, I'll see you guys next week.